Welcome to the first part of book number 3, Mr. Gum and the Goblins by Andy Strandhon. And I would like to stress once again that this is purely for personal use. No profit is being made from it. Right. Chapter 1, In the Dead of Winter. It was the dead of winter, and the little town of Lamernic Bibber lay under a blanket of snow and ice. Everywhere you looked, there was snow and ice. On the trees, snow and ice. On the ground, you guessed it, snow and ice. Inside the Museum of Snow and Ice, snow and ice. It was the coldest winter anyone could remember. Inside the inns and taverns, the men's folk sat around blazing log fires, drinking their ale and telling stories of never-to-be-forgotten heroes, like, what's his name in there, that tall man in the shirt who killed the dragons. In the houses, mothers put their young ones to bed, soothing them with gentle lullabies about fierce lions and crocodiles. In a cottage by the meadow, a hobbit sat reading Lord of the Rings and microwaving his feet to keep warm. "'Tis the dead of winter, all right." The streets of Lamernic Bibber were quiet at that late hour, but presently there came the sound of footsteps as three shadowy figures turned into the high street. And now I will tell you who they were, for I have seen them before, and perhaps you know them too. The leader was Friday O'Leary, a wise old man who knew the secrets of time and space. He carried a lantern, which cast a ghostly yellow light on the icy cobblestones. Next came a 9-year-old girl called Polly. She, too, carried a lantern, and it shone brave and true, just like her pure, strong heart. And last of all came little Alan Taylor, the headmaster of St. Piotrkowski's School for the Poor. He was a gingerbread man, with electric muscles, and he was only 15.24 centimetres tall. Alan Taylor was far too small to carry a lantern, but he had coated an acorn with glow-in-the-dark paint, and it was almost as good. "'Tis late, friends,' whispered Friday O'Leary as the church bell rang for 10 o'clock, belting out like an absolute marshmallows in the windy night. "'We should be getting home!' For who knows what the strange spirits are about in the dead of winter. There are like no strange spirits, kind Friday, chuckled Alan Taylor. Methinks you have been spending too much time in the taverns listening to the idle tales of drunk fools. Hey, said Polly, where's like everybody talking all funny like the weird ones out of books? We only done came out and gets a takeaway kebab. But just then, a horrible wailing noise rose on the wind like an out-of-tune opera singer being dragged down a blackboard. Polly and Alan Taylor jumped up in fright, and Friday did a dozen press-ups in terror. Whoa! He trembled. What is that? I've got no idea, gulped Polly, but I don't like the sound of that one bit. What if, squeaked Alan Taylor bravely, weighing himself in fear. That is like Mr. Gum. Now, at the mention of the name, they all went very quiet, because there was nothing worse than Mr. Gum, not even accidentally falling into a volcano full of history teachers. But Mr. Gum and his no-good friend Billy William, the third, were the most worst criminals in Lamernic Bibber had ever seen. And they had done some of the most shocking things of all time, including trying to poison a massive whopper of a dog called Jake to death and destruction, trying to steal £1 billion off poor little Alan Taylor, 3 tons of other stuff I can't think of at the moment. But, Alan Taylor, no one's seen Mr. Gum for ages, said Polly. Nevertheless, he might have come back, replied Friday gravely. For as the famous saying goes, he might have come back. Let us investigate. And the three friends set off to see what was what, their lanterns swinging hopefully against the darkness. With each step they took, the wailing grew louder until, well, it's coming from the belly behind Miss Lovely's sweet shop, said Friday. And even as he said those words, a hunched-up figure appeared in the narrow passage, staggering towards them with outstretched arms like a mummy. Not the nice type of mummy, obviously. The type with dusty old bandages who's always chasing you through museums at night because you dug them out of their pyramids. No, because you're a scientist, and that's what scientists do. But hold on, frowned Polly. We haven't been messing around in no pyramids lately. That can't be a mummy after all. Why? She exclaimed. It's Miss Lovely, and she's been all duffed up in a mingle. No! Cried Friday in distress, for Miss Lovely was his wife, and he loved her like a barbecue. No! He cried into the cold, cold night. No! Chapter 2. Walk of the Devil. But alas, it was indeed Miss Lovely, owner of the sweet shop, and general all-round goody. Onwards she came, stumbling half-blind over empty pizza boxes, and wailing miserably all the while. For once, Friday ran up to her to offer her aid and comfort, and some hazelnuts, and she collapsed, unconscious, in his arms. It was very dramatic and everything. "What happened to thee?" Friday sobbed, clutching Miss Lovely to his ear. "What badness has befallen thee, oh, darling wife?"
"Like, say your questions, Friday," advised Alan Taylor. "Miss Lovely is in shock, and it would be to like more than hazelnuts before she will tell us what terrible story. Come, let us get her to the place of rest."
So together the heroes carried Miss Lovely to a nearby inn, and a sign over the door read, "Walk of the Devil Tavern. No demons, phantoms, ghosts, ghouls, spirits, or werewolves are allowed. Or witches, or little dolls that come to life and try to get you. Vampires welcome. Actually, on second thoughts, no vampires either." Polly pushed open the heavy wooden door, and they went in. It was warm and cosy inside, and they were glad to be out of the cold. But upon their entry, everything went suddenly quiet. The menfolk stopped singing their merry songs and looked afraid. "Demons!" cried one, standing up, pointing with a trembling trembling finger even, towards the visitors. "'Tis a horde of demons come to eat our bones!"
"Ooh, you're right, Jack!" shrieked another. "'Tis demons for sure!"
And at that, the menfolk grew and flew into a panic, hiding under chairs, under tables, in pints of beer, anywhere they could. One man disguised himself as a fruit machine and stood there in the corner, covered in cherries and coughing up pound coins.
"Blimey, you menfolk is well ignorant," said Polly indignantly. "We're not demons."
"Not even slightly?" asked one of the menfolk anxiously.
"No," said Polly firmly. "You lot's too drunk much beer, and it's turned your brains all a fuzzy and full of bad imaginations. Now go home, menfolk, and get some sleep. And don't blame me if it's all got trouble headaches in the morning. I shouldn't wonder."
"Okay, 9-year-old girl," said the menfolk. "You're the boss, and for some reason." And off home they went.
"I do apologise for all that demon talk," said the innkeeper, as he led Polly and her friends upstairs. "But I thought they were drunk. The men's folk were right to be afraid. You never know who is going to come through that door in this terrible season, when spirits and ghouls are at large. Why, only last week, an evil skeleton came in and did a poo on the carpet. How I hate the dead of winter, he exclaimed. And the innkeeper showed the heroes to a cosy little bedroom with wooden floorboards, bowed once, and disappeared back downstairs. With great care, Friday dumped Miss Lovely down on the little bed. Polly fetched a flannel, and gently she scrubbed the slime from Miss Lovely's goodly face. And Alan Taylor hopped up and down on her chin, and gently he tossed her good teeth, or flossed them even.
I shall take first watch, said Friday, pulling up his chair. If she wakes, I will wake you too, but until then, she must not be disturbed. The truth is a lemon meringue, he yelled at the top of his voice,
as he sometimes liked to do. At once Miss Lovely's eyes snapped open, and she sat bolt upright in bed, like a startled panda caught shoplifting bamboo.
Boring,
she gabbled, looking around in confusion.
Where am I?
Fear not, Miss L,
exclaimed Friday,
for 'tis I, your beloved husband, me.
Oh, hello, Friday,
said Miss Lovely weakly.
What's going on?
Suddenly she caught her breath and drew the bed cover to her cheek in terror.
Goblin Mountain,
she murmured in the freckled candlelight.
Now I remember.
Tell us your tale, dearest wife face, said Friday tenderly,
caressing her nose with his.
But will you do it as a song? He asked eagerly.
Now is not the time for songs, my love, replied Miss Lovely. Besides, I'm all weak and feeble. I just can't go like I used to. I'm going to say it normally.
Bah,
smirked Friday, but Miss Lovely was determined to tell her tale her own way.
It was like this,
she began.
You know how I'm always after unusual herbs to make my sweets? Well, the best ones grow up in Goblin Mountain. So, early this morning, I did climb to get all of those herbs. But soon, a blizzard wiped up, and I couldn't see a thing. And then, suddenly, I found myself under attack from creatures unknown. They bit and scratched, and I thought I was doomed, but somehow I fought my way loose and escaped. After that, I don't remember a thing. Now, here I am, safe and sound. Hooray!
What do you think them creatures was? Asked Polly.
I'm not sure, said Miss Lovely. That's why they were creatures unknown. But like I say, it happened on Goblin Mountain, just outside the Goblin Cave, where the Goblin River runs swift and blue.
Said
Friday thoughtfully, twirling his famous imaginary detective moustache.
Goblin Mountain! Goblin Cave! Goblins, goblins!
It all points to one thing, Miss Lovely, he announced triumphantly. It was badgers who attacked you, a gang of wild badgers driven mad by the cold winter and too much sugar.
We'll get some, cried Polly, sticking her head out of the window towards Goblin Mountain. Oi, badgers! She shouted just in case they could hear her over the long distance like whales or telephones. You gone too far this time, you stripy rascals. We're going to come and sort you out.
During all this, Alan Taylor had been sitting in an ashtray on the bedside table, listening carefully. And now it was his turn to speak. For he knew all about the natural world, and that was why he was headmaster of St. Petrarchal's School for the Poor.
I don't think it was badgers, he said. You see, badgers
mainly come out at night, and Miss Lovely was attacked by day. Also, badgers tend to attack small mammals like shrews and voles, and marmots,
a type of large ground squirrel.
They hardly ever, like, attack Miss Lovely. You know what I think it was?
Badgers? Said Friday, who had hardly been listening properly.
No,
said Alan Taylor.
I think it was goblins.
Goblins? Whispered Polly in fright.
Goblins?
Whispered Miss Lovely fearfully.
Goblins,
nodded Alan Taylor gravely, and the moon slid out from behind the cloud, and the light spilled into the room like a long skeletal finger. And from up high on Goblin Mountain, they seemed to hear a horrible laugh that was probably just their imaginations, but it gave them goosebumps all the same. Chapter 3. In the Court of the Goblin King. So, let us now go far, far from the room at the tavern where our heroes sit covered in goosebumps. Far, far from the high street where Martin Laundretta is working on a very secret invention, which probably won't get explained until a bit later. Far, far from the woods on the edge of town where Friday's secret cottage lies hidden. Far, far from Lamont Bibber, and away we go over the frozen fields and streams until we come to a place where the snow falls like Frankenstein's dandruff and the wind howls like Dracula's scrabbling at his big toe on a coffee table. Where the way is hard and steep and twisty, there is no sunlight ever seems to fall. To Goblin Mountain. Up, up the cold, bare mountainside we go, almost to the very top, until we come to a horrible, gaping hole, all ragged and torn from rocks. And there is a terrible din coming from the hole, like nothing ever heard before. For 'tis Goblin Cave, and 'tis rammed full of goblins.
Big ones, weeny ones, sort of in-betweeny ones, goblins. Bald ones, hairy ones, dirty, great, big, scary ones, goblins. Giant ones, tiny ones, nasty little spiny ones, goblins. Stinky ones, clean ones, not really, they were all stinky, goblins.
Yes, wherever you look. Tails and spikes and fins and fur and extra arms and knobbly knees and all sorts. One of the goblins even had two heads and sat there consistently arguing with himself. No, he didn't say yes. He did. No, he didn't. Oh, and talk about badly behaved. Those goblins were always up to mischief. Scratching and biting and hanging onto the ceiling and gobbling on one another from below. Cheating a monopoly, you name it. The only time they ever shut up was when the Goblin King arrived to give his commands. And there he sat, right in the middle of all that chaos, sprawled on a great throne made from rusty dentist chairs he'd found on the mountainside one afternoon. His eyes were red and bloodshot, and his long, cruel fingers dipped with silver rings. He'd stolen off an old age pensioner. And in his big red beard sat dark green emerald, gleaming nastily. My word, those goblins, or goblins even, loved that big fat jewel.
Shiny thing!
They would cry when they caught sight of the light.
Shiny thing! Shiny thing! Shiny thing!
All their shouting drove the Goblin King crazy. But he had to put up with it. It was just part of his job. At the king's side stood his partner in dirt, a shady character known only as the Burger Wizard III. He wore a robe made from an old sack which said, "Low quality meat chops," and he was smoking a pipe full of mud.
Ain't see a puff, me old goblin king,
coughed up the burger wizard, brandishing his pipe.
It's really nice,
he lied through another cough.
Get lost, Flemmy, replied the goblin king. Where's my supper? I'm starving me face off here.
No problem, said Billy William, or BW for short. He reached into his filthy robe and pulled out a bunch of screaming chicken entrails.
Mmm, delicious.
What was that noise?
Growled the Goblin King, swallowing them down whole.
Now, I've got some important kingy stuff to do. Mighty Goblin Army,
he commanded.
Tell me your news, or I'll give you a Chinese burn.
With this, the captain of the Goblin Army ran forward, his lieutenant at his side.
Good,
Captain Ankles reported.
Re-attack old woman and duff her up.
Who cares about some stupid old woman,
roared the Goblin King.
What I want to know is how my evil plan is coming along. You built that tunnel yet?
Oh, nearly finished,
called the lieutenant, whose name was Oik Balloon.
One more day, dig and then we finally get there.
That's more like it,
snorted the Goblin King.
Now for a nice long snooze.
And he closed his eyes and put his feet up.
Shiny thing, shiny thing, shiny thing,
screamed the goblins, pointing at the enamel in his beard and jumping up and down like carrot cakes.
Shabber me whiskers,
scared the king.
These creatures is noisy. Whoever fought leading a goblin army would be such a bother.
And that is the end of part one of Mr. Gum and the Goblins. Ciao.